Dude, pull.
I feel like, if anything, pulling's going to make it worse.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah.
Hey, guys. Wow, what happened to Eli?
It's the Quince ad, Noah. They told me that summer I was supposed to change the way I dress, and so
again, they meant, like, nicer shorts.
Well, they should have said that, because I tried from the top.
Wait, I'm sorry. Quince has summer wear?
They sure do. They focus on high-quality essentials that feel and look amazing, like breathable linen and soft organic cotton. Well-made basics, but without the luxury markup. It's that rare balance where everything feels elevated, but still effortless.
Well, that sounds great.
It is. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 8% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup.
But have you actually tried it?
I sure have. I got a new pair of shorts from Quince, and I got so many compliments, I bought two more. That's why I, Heath Enright, personally endorse Quince.
I can't move my arms!
All right, Heath, I'm sold. Where do I sign up?
Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/skeptocrat for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/skeptocrat for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/skeptocrat. It's Monday.
It's August 10th.
And the word of the day is binfluencer, which means the neighbor who puts their trash bins out first and reminds everyone else. Used in the sentence, Nigel Farage might get put out by a royal binfluencer named Count Binface as a gift for Marsh's birthday.
Okay, I think someone just misunderstood when I said that my birthday wish was for someone to take out Nigel Farage.
Oh, Department of Justice is going to come after you for that one. I'm No Illusions.
I'm Michael Marshall.
I'm Heath Enright. And broadcasting delayed from America's Far Center and across the pond, we are the Skeptocrats.
On this week's episode, we'll have always been at war with East Asia.
An old Who's Woo subject gets in touch with an opportunity too good to turn down.
And presidential hopeful Tucker Carlson wants a house to go with his replacement theory.
You don't want him to clash, yeah. But first, the rest of the intro music.
Joining me for headlines tonight are my fellow Skeptocrats, No Illusions, and Michael Marshall. Gentlemen, what the fuck is happening with Donald Trump's hair? We got to talk about it real quick.
I thought a lot about this, Heath. I think my theory right now is that the remnants of his brain are being squeezed out of his follicle holes in long strands like the spaghetti Play-Doh attachment.
Okay, yeah, okay. It could be that.
That
it could
fits
be that.
What I'm looking at.
Or maybe his hair's like getting stronger by draining the life force from Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell in some kind of like Highlander situation. That could be happening.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
He's the picture of Dorian Graying. Yeah, absolutely. So maybe he got the wig. Maybe the thing Noah said is happening faster now. It's more brain, and that it's not a wig.
Exactly,
it's just it got bigger and changed color in 4 days. Okay. We also have a candidate of the day, my fellow Michigander, Dr. Abdul El-Sayed, is the nominee for U.S. Senate. I'm very excited. He's going to have a tough race in a purple state against a Republican who's a bit less wildly unqualified than the average Republican, for whatever that's worth. So get the fuck on board. AbdulForSenate.com if you want to check him out. Love this guy.
In our lead story tonight, the other day I was in a restaurant that was playing Fox News because I live in Waycross fucking Georgia and I wanted to eat. No real choice. I draw the line at the chicken place that has Newsmax on all day, but I'd starve if I didn't buy food from bigots around here.
Yeah, especially because the bistro that plays CNN is only for birthdays and anniversaries, I guess.
There's no bistros here. Anyway, so the point is that in the hour and 15 minutes that Fox News was playing over my wife's shoulder, there was never once a mention of the fact that the U.S. is at war with Iran. They managed to find 6 or 7 minutes for a French trans basketball player, you know, a little bit for our fucking candidate of the day. They'd reserved about 27 minutes for him, but none for the 5-month-old war that we're losing to Iran. Because Donald Trump and the entirety of the Republican Party and its propaganda ecosystem are literally trying to win the war with the ignore it and it'll go away strategy at this point.
Yeah, kind of like Trump's hands, feet, and America First voting base, right? Hey-o! Got him.
Honestly, I think at this point, their best bet is to go all in creating like a real UFO to disclose.
Oh, you're right. Something
impressive enough to bury both the Iran war and the Epstein files. This could be your next space race. They could supercharge American technology from here.
Yeah.
You say things and then they're going to happen.
Yeah, right.
You can't do satire. Careful.
Now, of course, Trump's misadventure in Iran is plagued by a laundry list of problems stemming back to a lack of long-term planning and short-term planning as well, if we're being honest. Mm-hmm. Having apparently mistaken Iran for a Gorgon, he assumed that cutting off its head would result in a quick victory. But it turns out that most countries do not immediately capitulate and let you have their nation if you kill their supreme religious leader.
Yeah, if only there were some other creature in mythology that could act as a warning that cutting off its head only makes things worse.
You need to cauterize the neck, you dumbass, obviously. So now, having done no strategic planning, very little mobilization, and no munitions buildup, we're all watching on helplessly as Trump very slowly learns how wars work.
Okay, there was literally an email last week that got leaked from a Pentagon official to a bunch of other high-level people in the Pentagon. It basically just said, like, hey, y'all, any creative ideas for this Iran thingy?
Yes!
Just hit me up.
Yes!
Like, almost exact words.
Oh, it's so scary. So the main problem that the U.S. has right now is that it's being led by a senile idiot surrounded by yes-men and powered by a spineless party of self-dealing sycophants. But other than that, the main problem is that our shit costs way more than their shit. We're shooting down $35,000 drones with $4 million missiles, and that shit ain't sustainable. Even worse, the drones are run off of assembly lines and take a few hours to fabricate from start to fucking finish. A single Patriot missile takes 2 goddamn years to make. And that's assuming you already have all the facilities and personnel trained to do it, which if you're trying to ramp up production, you don't.
Yeah. Iran basically shot a bunch of lawnmowers into the air with a slingshot, and they got us to use most of our entire missile stock trying to deal with it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's amazing. Billions. It means that as a result of Trump's ongoing mismanagement, America is running out of patriots. It's like your country is a live-action version of one of those hacky, on-the-nose political cartoons.
Right, yeah. There's like a label that says patriot on the missile
exactly.
For fuck's sake. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we got it. We got it.
But Patriot interceptors are hardly the only munitions we're running out of. This is why the rhythm of the war has been so halting, right? Trump will threaten a massive bombardment to explode Iran into submission. We'll get like 3 hours into it before they're tossing out carbon snakes and lady fingers and shit. And then Trump will announce that, you know, he and Iran have reached a temporary agreement to halt the fighting. Iran will announce that no, the fuck they didn't. And some White House intern will clean up the wall ketchup yet again.
Okay, I feel like there's a whiteboard somewhere in the Pentagon. It just says, like, X-Men question? Do we have X-Men?
Well, and of course, the longer this war drags on, the worse the munitions issue gets, obviously. According to an analysis last week by the Center for Strategic and International Studies, inventories of Patriot missiles have been depleted by 2/3, and THAAD missile stockpiles have been halved. In addition, sources inside the military are telling the media that we're also running dangerously low on long-range offensive missiles. Which means that if we want to keep attacking Iran, we're going to have to rely more and more on pilots to do it.
Yeah, which is perfect timing, what with Pete Hegseth purging out all the people from the military that he deems not straight and cis enough for his liking. But, you know, the ones that are left at least are going to have such high testosterone they'll be able to take out those drones with their bare teeth.
Or their balls, yeah. So we're going to jizz them out of the air. So Trump, of course, responded to these reports with contradictory dismissals and threats. He threatened, quote, long-term jail sentences, end quote, for anybody who leaked this information, and he said it wasn't true.
They're doing good counterintelligence then. What do you
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. Now, in fact, not only does he say that we have plenty of missiles, we actually have infinity of them. Quote, we have certain types of munitions that are very powerful, of which we have unlimited...
Yeah.
Virtually unlimited supply, end quote. He also claimed that we're getting more on a daily basis, which is weird if we already have infinity of them. That seems like a waste.
No, but it's possible. You can do it. You just need to get each missile to move up to the next munitions crate along. They call it Kilbert's Hotel.
Okay.
okay, there's a Civil War museum with a bunch of those musket balls, I'm pretty sure. Like a refrigerator box of the musket balls. And I think, this is a rumor, they might have a pterodactyl. I was told they might have a pterodactyl. But everybody be cool. Nobody say anything about the pterodactyl.
Yeah, right. We wanted that to be a surprise on the battlefield. So he doubled down on his bullshit denials on social media on Thursday. He posted, quote, "The U.S. has massive amounts of munitions," which is in quotes for some fucking reason, "especially of certain types. Additionally, large amounts are being manufactured and shipped to the U.S. as needed. Defense companies are building the largest number of plants and factories in our country's history," end quote. Which, like, I guess it's weird that we didn't notice an industrial mobilization larger than that of World War II and all, but I also don't think that image would even reassure the dingleberries that still believe him about shit.
Also, just unrelated, separate thing, everyone buy some Liberty cabbage and plenty of stamps. It's unrelated.
So behind the scenes, it appears that Trump's message, though, is a bit different. We got reports on Friday that Trump exploded on Pete Hegseth during a meeting at Camp David, and not for the first time. Trump apparently accused Hegseth of misleading him about the munitions shortage, as well as the war in Iran itself. Hegseth reportedly tried to pass the buck to Deputy Defense Secretary Steven Feinberg. I guess he's the one that's supposed to do the shopping, after all. Now, Trump, of course, denies all of this. He says everything's going awesome with him and Hegseth, and he even said that reporting otherwise might be, quote, treasonous. End quote. So I guess sorry for dragging you guys into my insurrection, I guess.
Hey, I'm not a U.S. citizen. This isn't treason for me. This is just good old-fashioned sedition.
Oh, that's true.
Pete, Steve, whoever, put a few thousand tomahawks in the Instacart and check out already. Let's fucking go.
Right.
What are you doing?
Yeah, like, if your munitions continue to deplete this quickly, those pilots are going to have to learn how to throw actual tomahawks at this point.
Right. Yeah. And of course, this matters far beyond Iran. I think the fears that China's going to attack us or otherwise take advantage of our military's weakened state are overblown, right? We've made it clear that China doesn't have to lift a finger to help us destroy ourselves as a superpower at this point. But defense experts are saying it's going to take at least 5 years to replenish these supplies that Trump and Hegseth have already blown through. And the odds that Vladimir Putin is going to get more aggressive in that time, knowing the U.S. can't actually defend its NATO allies, that shot up considerably. All I'm saying is, it's a good thing you guys left Europe when you did, Marsh, because Europe's about to get mad fucked on this deal. And quick, before I'm arrested for treason, we're going to pause for a word from this week's sponsor, Mint Mobile.
Hey, podcast listener, let's talk about summer, but also be ready for a subtle pivot. When we were kids, summer meant freedom. No homework, no teachers, no school. And as adults, summer still means freedom thanks to Mint Mobile's summer sale. Right now, all of Mint's plans are just $15 a month, even the unlimited plan. So free yourself from big wireless and their gimmicks and gotchas and switch to Mint for high-speed data and coverage on the T-Mobile 5G network. As an elder millennial, I use my phone as the useful tool that it is, but I do not connect it to my face at all times like an IV drip of algorithmic slop and stupid propaganda. So I wanted a plan that gives me everything I need, but without the gimmicks and gotchas and bloated price tag. That's why I love Mint Mobile. It's super easy to switch over, and you get high-quality service for a great price. No shenanigans, no chicanery, no ballyhoo. What? All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can even bring your current phone and your number. Choose from 3, 6, or 12-month plans and say goodbye to a monthly bill. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile. It's so easy. Sign up online and get 3 months of premium wireless service for just $15 a month. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/skeptocrat. That's mintmobile.com/skeptocrat. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/skeptocrat. That's it. There's no catch. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12 months, plan required. $15 per month equivalent. Taxes and fees extra, initial plan term only. Greater than 50 gigabytes may slow when network is busy. Includes up to 20 gigabyte hotspot. Capable device required. Availability, speed, and coverage varies. See mintmobile.com. Because when it comes to phones, the greatest wisdom comes from an elder millennial. The Greatest Generation.
And we're back. And next up in headlines in It's Been an Odd Day's Night News, a.k.a. A Scandal Our Day Keeps the Doctorate Away News.
Oh, jeez. Ah! All right, Heath is now furiously going in to add a second pun to his headline intro so that you don't win.
PhD shit. Go ahead.
Well, the news here in the UK has been dominated in the past week by the revelation that a professor at the University of Cambridge seems to have plagiarized parts of their doctoral thesis. And I know what you're thinking. Isn't it great that the UK is in such a steady place right now that there's nothing more troubling for the people and the press to be focused on? Well, no, not really. Like, there are thousands of people who've died in the recent heat waves. Our rivers are filled with toxic chemicals. And last time I checked, Wales was on fire.
Hey, guys, I know you're dealing with like a fire cloud or whatever, but these footnotes are looking a little shaky. Can we focus on this right now?
And look, I do get it. The University of Cambridge, it's an important institution for the cultural history of this country. After all, it's where we get the prime ministers of this country when the University of Oxford is busy, for example.
Oh, shit.
But its professional reputation, yeah, that's big news. But you might still be surprised to hear that so much time and so much ink has been spilled so prominently over the academic record of one of the 200 people who hold a professorial post at the university. So let me just clear things up for you. The guy's black.
There it is. Okay, so prime minister wasn't going to happen. You got to like write stuff or you got to have you gotta make money.
Meanwhile, some environmental activist in an office somewhere is brainstorming on how to make people think that wildfires like rap music or whatever.
Now, first of all, don't get me wrong here. Things do look pretty bad for sociology professor Jason Arday. He was lauded as the youngest black professor ever appointed to Cambridge when he landed that role in 2023. But an investigation into his doctoral thesis does appear to show that substantial sections were either copied verbatim or with very minor wording changes from a 2009 thesis by Dr. Paula Zwozdiak-Myers.
I do love the minor wording changes tactic. They'll never figure this one out. It's like when my little sister stole all my Garbage Pail Kids and then she put one of her Garbage Pail Kids on top of the stack. Like, that was going to fool me.
And it's easy to see why the University of Cambridge were so keen on his appointment in 2023. His personal story reads as hugely inspirational. He's autistic. He was nonverbal until the age of 11, and he was unable to read or write until the age of 18. But then he was awarded his PhD from Liverpool John Moores University and got this professorship at the age of 37. Unquestionably proving, at least from his PhD, that he'd mastered the art of reading by that point, given how closely he read Zwozdiak-Myers' thesis, at least.
Or the ChatGPT from 4 years ago hadn't learned the manual of style for citations yet, something like that.
And this whole meteoric rise, it's either clearly impressive or suspect. And it should probably have warranted a lot more further attention at the time, as should some of the other claims that he's made about his life, such as that he once ran 600 miles in 6 days, which would be an achievement that would have made him one of the most gifted endurance runners of all time.
Pretty impressive.
He also claims to have run 30 marathons in 35 days, even after he suffered an epileptic seizure on day 20, in which he fractured his leg, but then carried on to complete the remaining 9 marathons with a hairline fracture.
Okay, I heard he once tied at golf against Kim Jong-il. Like, that's so hard to do. Nil-nil final score.
Oh, wow.
It was insane.
Wow. Yeah, are we sure this guy isn't one of Eli's citation needed essays?
Here, I mean, he may well end up that way.
30 marathons in 35 fucking days.
Well, he said that the distance that he ran, it was part of his efforts to raise £5 million for charity. Though, when he was questioned on that, his story became that he raised it alongside many fundraising colleagues over a 2-decade period. And when he was asked who those colleagues were, he declined to give names, saying that he'd signed an NDA preventing him from telling anyone.
What?
Which feels like it's taken the whole doesn't like to talk about their charity work way too far.
Guys, this was awesome. We just raised £5 million for charity. We shall never speak of this again. Everybody slice your hand with a knife. Sounds legit. Sounds totally legit. Well, I'll also sign the NDA. Fuck. Okay, now we're bleeding.
Yeah, and we signed it lefty. Fuck. I do. I like this one, though. I'm going to start using this all the time. Lucinda will be like, wait, did you eat the plums I was saving in the icebox? And I'll be like, oh, you know, I signed an NDA about refrigerator contents. So.
Well, Arde has been prominently in the public eye ever since those announcements of his professorship in 2023, which he claims led to death threats that have limited how much public speaking he was advised by the police that he was able to do. And look, it is undeniable that he received a lot of racist abuse, though some of the specific incidents that he mentions are a lot less certain. So he says he was confronted twice in the faculty building at his university by a masked intruder with a knife, but CCTV didn't see anything. And while he claims that he hit the panic button in his office, he says the alarm failed to work, and therefore he decided to report neither the incident nor the faulty panic button.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah, and meanwhile, he was fine, you know, with the panic button that didn't work and totally cool with a knife-wielding maniac wandering around his colleagues' offices. That said, if the attacker was in fact a racist, the rest of the faculty were probably going to be fairly safe. It's Cambridge, yeah, after all.
Psst, Jason, I'm invisible, that's why you can hear me, but not see me. We got to sign another NDA about the secret marathon.
That's why
I have this knife.
No, so I I get this, though. Like, he's the new guy. He doesn't want to get the reputation as the guy who complains with every little attempted assault with a deadly weapon, you know.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. He also claims that he was sent a severed pig's head through the post as a warning, and he only reported that to the police several months later, except later, when he's retelling the story, he reported it immediately to the police, and the police even tracked the hog back to the butcher who sold it. But then when the Guardian checked with the police and also with the butcher, they were told there was no such incident at all.
Sorry, you're asking me if I sent a severed pig's head to a black guy? What's his name? Jason? No, no. I don't know. Are you going to buy anything? You just hear from the Guardian? You should buy something.
Was it really a boar's head ham, Jason?
It was really a boar's head ham.
So look, while I've got no more insight than the next guy on the truthfulness or otherwise of Arde's various accounts, it doesn't look good for him right now, and it's pretty right that he's resigned from his professorship. But the reason that this has received so much attention is that it's kicked off this whole conversation in parts of the UK with people asking, what does this mean about other black professors at other universities? And I am very happy to answer that question for you. Nothing. Glad to clear that up for you.
Mm-hmm. Or, I don't know, we could check on, like, white professors and what they do sometimes. No? No?
Yeah.
Ah, they're gone. They're gone.
It's so weird that there wasn't a corresponding conversation about how this reflected on young professors or male professors. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when it's knowing that all of this initial scrutiny of Arde came after his work was analysed in a Substack post by Nathan Koffness. And we can't overlook Nathan's motivations. So he used to be an academic at Cambridge as well, but then he was disciplined in 2024 after writing on his self-defined race realism blog that under a strict colourblind meritocracy, black people would, quote, disappear from almost all high-profile positions outside of sports and entertainment, and that elite institutions like Harvard would recruit from the best of the best, so the number of black professors would approach 0%.
Hey, so it sounds to me like Nathan was plagiarizing from Samuel Alito, and somebody should check him.
Now, Koffness is an obvious racist, and his reasons for investigating Arde were driven by his racism. And the way I see it, he just happened to strike gold by finding someone with so much wrong in their back catalogue. Mm-hmm. But I'd also say that if Koffness was motivated by anti-left-handed bigotry rather than racial animus, and if he turned the same analytic fever to the many left-handed professors at universities in the UK, he'd eventually be able to find someone whose credentials and credibility were just as flimsy who happened to be left-handed. But he's not going to do that because he doesn't care about left-handedness. And if he did, it wouldn't make the news either because people don't care about left-handedness. Race is the motivation for all of this here.
Yes. Yeah. Way too often people forget that, like, even when bigots are right, bigotry stays wrong. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
You've lost me.
And it's also likely true that race played a part into the motivation of Cambridge in hiring Arde at such a young age in the first place. Because then they got to publish this inspirational story about the youngest ever black professor. And if they did that, maybe people wouldn't think too closely about their poor history of diversity. Given that as recently as 2015, out of 3,449 students at Cambridge, 15 of them were black men. And that is why black critics of elite universities are pointing out that the way that Arday's appointment was announced and then promoted as this inspirational story inevitably made it seem like he was there because of his race and not because of his achievements, which were arguably tokenizing him and turning him into a mascot for the university, while making it much harder for people to apply the kind of scrutiny that would have been due unless they were, you know, a race realist with a chip on their shoulder.
Sure.
Okay, I got to be honest. It's kind of weird that Cambridge didn't have any of those you just described on the hiring committee. Right?
Yeah, that's the biggest surprise of the story. Yeah, honestly.
So yeah, it does seem like Arday's work isn't what it claimed to be. But no, this says nothing at all about any other black professor. Any more than it says anything about any male professor or an autistic professor or a professor with a curiously good record on Strava. This isn't proof that DEI is anti-white, or that there's a, you know, rampant culture of positive discrimination in the UK, or that the race realists are right. It's just proof that your skin colour has no bearing on how likely or unlikely you are to be full of shit. And it's evidence that even a pig that's up to its snout in shit all day can sometimes accidentally stumble across a truffle.
There you go.
And in 87, 86, 85 news, according to the Department of Justice, I just put out a hit on former NFL wide receiver Chad Ochocinco. And so did everyone who ever counted down from 100. Mm-hmm. Chad seems fine, and I haven't heard about any big investigations, but it gets way more serious and not at all silly when seashells are involved. This is serious. And that's why former FBI Director James Comey is currently being prosecuted for threatening to murder Donald Trump using seashells and Instagram.
Okay, did someone just hear that Comey was using shells and then they assumed this was another munitions-based threat?
So, yeah, you should hear what they did to all the people at the White House Correspondents' Dinner who told him to break a leg. It was pretty that ugly.
So here's the background, in case anyone missed it. In May of last year, Comey saw an arrangement of shells on the beach that spelled out 8647. And he took a picture and put it on the gram. And that's when fighter jets got scrambled, mm-hmm. Trump got rushed to the safety of his bunker by the Secret Service, and the DOJ immediately fired up a case against Comey. And now the prosecution is actually happening, with Comey facing up to 10 years in prison. That's a real prosecution that's happening right now using taxpayer money. We're really doing that.
Yeah, it sounds ridiculous. And you might think there should be a rule that you can't be imprisoned for any threats made using things that a 9-year-old might use for crafts. But if you had that rule, you just end up with ransom notes written in glitter, and that stuff gets everywhere.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's the last thing you need to deal with when you're already worried about a kidnapped loved one. I want to point out, Heath, not to make a correction here, but they can't rush him to his bunker because the idiot demolished it at the beginning of his presidency, and he doesn't have the permits to rebuild it all the way, so...
So now James Comey is having his entire life upended by a stupid grudge being held by Trump, which is weird considering, you know, the actual facts of reality. First of all, Trump fired Comey in 2017. Trump is doing grudge backwards, yeah. Like conceptually. Also, crucially, James Comey very clearly helped Trump in the 2016 election by investigating the nothing about Hillary's email, finding no crimes, and then 12 days before the election announcing a reinvestigation that something needed more scrutiny. Turns out it was, again, nothing. But regardless, Trump just barely won that election.
Right, but Comey didn't actively invent evidence of crimes against Hillary, so that is effectively treason.
Yeah. A lot of inactions are effectively treason these days, aren't
That's
they?
That's kind of how it works.
Right.
So the DOJ indicted Comey earlier this year, and he had to hire a team of lawyers to explain, seriously, fucking seashells?
Yeah, right.
But like in Latin or whatever. They filed for dismissal, citing vindictive prosecution, because obviously. And the stuff they found while building the defense is truly insane. After the jets got scrambled, Trump immediately, this part's real, he had the FBI spying on James Comey. They tapped his phone, they tracked his location, and they tailed him as he drove around. That includes a team of spies that was following Comey while he visited the gravesite of his dead son. Yeah, and it turns out he was not making a move to kill the president.
Huh.
Okay, but did they check to see whether Comey had, like, left a coded secret message in the arrangement of flowers by his son's headstone?
Well, yeah, I mean, going to a graveyard is a death-type thing to do, so it's very suspicious.
So, the defense team also pointed out how stupid it is to assume 86 means murder. Like, always means murder. And I, very occasionally, I guess, but, like, obviously not here. For example, they mentioned that hundreds of thousands of items have been sold on Amazon that are branded with 8647. And zero of those led to any DOJ criminal investigations. Hmm. The defense also found that the FBI spent the last year trying furiously and failing to prove that 86 was a call for assassination. The FBI searched their entire database and found nothing. They spoke with retired agents who worked on cases against the mafia. Still nothing. Then they spoke with Sammy the Bull Gravano. Seriously. That's the mob guy who narked on John Gotti, the former head of the Gambino crime family in New York. And the very credible Sammy the Bull told them 86 can be slang for kill in the mob. Already knew that. That's nothing. Comey was involved in the case against John Gotti, so he interacted with Gravano. And Gravano said he never spoke with Comey about the term 86. But Sammy is still pretty sure Comey was calling for Trump to get whacked there. I don't know why, but that's what he said. Seriously, that's the star witness for the prosecution, a known killer named The Bull.
Who's never met anyone involved in the case, right? And to be clear, everything can be slang for kill in the mafia. Did you do that thing is slang for kill in the mafia. So I guess every time Comey did a thing, that's proof of his violent tendencies now?
Yeah. Or he was trying to murder Donald Trump off a restaurant menu. Yeah. You could have 86. You never know. So that's what 86 is. It's a restaurant thing, everybody.
Yes, exactly, exactly. It's, you know how they want you to murder the spinach dip all the time in restaurants?
Right. So here's the latest stupid development. Last week, Kash Patel declassified and released a bunch of documents about a 2017 FBI investigation that started after Trump fired Comey. It was looking into any witting or unwitting activity that was connected to Russia. Trump and Patel, they released this on purpose, and they're acting like they just revealed how the old FBI of 2017 was unfairly going after Trump. That's the narrative for a bunch of the media, too. But that's fucking stupid. Speaking of which, here's the spin from Trump's lackeys at Fox News. The investigation, it was called Oxford, and they spelled it weird with an E. The second O in Oxford is actually an E and a zero instead of the O in comma. And according to Fox, that would make it harder to learn about this operation with a FOIA request. And therefore, and you know what? I'm going to stop you right there, Fox News. I'm pretty sure we took away your therefores. Your privileges for therefore got taken away a while ago because you're imbeciles. Nonetheless, they're saying weird spelling, hence Oxford comma, was actually a secret plot by the deep state to build a big lie about Donald Trump's connection to Russia. Spoiler, he was super de-duper connected to Russia.
He was.
Yeah. Operation Oxford comma was looking into Russian assets, Mike Flynn, and Donald Trump.
That's so good.
Marsh, that is the greatest joke ever written. And it is a shame that the listeners can't see the fucking script right now. That's so goddamn good.
There's a stripper involved with Trump. And a Monica Stalin thing going on. Yeah, a lot of stuff going on there. Mwah. And just a few reminders in case you have to deal with your stupid Republican uncle or whatever about this topic. First of all, the Oxford comma investigation became the Mueller probe. It got spun into the Mueller probe, all of which happened while Trump was president. Just a reminder there. And Mueller very clearly found all the stuff about Russia that everyone was worried about. Trump was an unwitting Russian asset at best, but definitely that.
Yeah, and that's only because he's incapable of witting. Yeah.
Putin definitely wanted Trump to win in 2016, so Russia definitely helped attack Hillary Clinton and elevate Trump and elevate Jill Stein.
Yeah.
And they found that members of the Trump campaign definitely did crimes. Michael Cohen, Michael Flynn, Rick Gates, Paul Manafort, George Papadopoulos, and Roger Stone all got indicted for the crimes they did while working for Donald Trump's campaign. I know Trump and his lackeys like to claim the Mueller report exonerated him, but it absolutely did not. Mueller did a congressional hearing just to explain this does not exonerate Trump, idiots, which was in the report. If anyone actually fucking read it, Mueller made it super clear that Trump himself was never really on the table to get indicted, because even if the probe found crimes by Trump, and he wasn't technically saying that's what happened, the DOJ doesn't do indictments of the sitting president. Mueller even had a dedicated section in the report that said, approximate quote, "I'm not allowed to indict Trump. Congress is allowed to do that." So if anyone in Congress is reading this report that I submitted to Congress and you think he might have done some crimes, maybe do your fucking jobs.
Right. Yeah.
Really close to the
and
quote.
Most of the people only think the report exonerated him because a different attorney general he now demonizes for not manufacturing evidence against his enemies lied about it publicly a few days before it came out.
Yeah. And just circling back to the Comey prosecution for a minute, let's think about the scenario being suggested by the DOJ. They're saying James Comey literally intended to murder Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And then he went for a murder planning walk on the beach. But he thought to himself, I'm murdering the president. It's going to be like a whole thing. I'm going to get somebody else to do it. So, so then he scrolled through all the hitmen in his contacts on his phone. But, you know, he wasn't feeling great about any of them. He had little notes next to him that were like, no, not that great. And then he thought, wait a minute. I could just call for a hit using shells and snap a picture, and then that would inception all of my followers on Instagram. At least one of them is going to do the murder at that point, right?
Yeah.
That's the narrative.
That's exactly it. He was crowdsourcing at this point. And if that's the case, that's not okay. Because to Comey, you can't just do like a competition to see which of your fans will do the best assassination of Trump and the one that does the best wins, just so you can take advantage of their willingness to provide you free labor. It's 2026. Pay your creatives.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, it feels like GoFundMe isn't going to let me do the thing I want to do, so there's no point even suggesting it.
You got to go at 86:45 or get somebody to do that hit. Okay, so that narrative I just said, it's that, or Comey's on the murder walk, and then just by chance, he found some shells arranged by someone else, and he was like, oh my God, this is so cool. This actually spells out my murder plot. Oh my God. Okay, I'm going to post this on Instagram, and then I'll delete the post and make it clear I didn't mean anything violent by that, even though that's not necessary at all. And then I'm going to turn myself in for an absurd prosecution, and now I wait. That's the other narrative from the DA. It's one of those two.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, and this is very important, we have no waiting period for getting seashells. You can go to like Dick's Sporting Goods, and there's a potential assassin at large.
Right? Oh, maybe he's doing the prosecution to get close to Trump, right? Like the Joker in Dark Knight. And in Grouchy Fauci Fauci's news, the latest bid to distract from the war in Iran, which itself was the latest bid to distract from the Epstein files, seems to be dragging Dr. Anthony Fauci back out of retirement to face a barrage of 4chan comments disguised as congressional oversight.
So stupid.
So we got to watch as one of America's greatest public servants of my lifetime was subjected to the senior citizen version of bullying the science nerd. And when he responded by taking the fifth 111 times, like any sane fucking person would under the circumstances, his Republican inquisitors freaked the fuck out because sane responses rarely even occur to them.
Yeah, great job by Fauci. I wanted him to wear like a giant COVID mask, you know, like Bane, that would garble his words and then keep taking it off and being like, Fifth Amendment. I said Fifth Amendment. But okay, like this did job too. He did the job.
Yeah. But yeah, like some people are trying to spin it. Like, well, why would he take the fifth if he was innocent? But they're missing the fact that when you're up in front of a kangaroo court that you know has zero evidence but is desperate to find you guilty, the only move that makes sense is to shut the fuck up.
Which is the entire point of the Fifth fucking Amendment, by the way. So this whole thing starts, well, I guess it starts in early 2020 when Trump fucks up the COVID response so goddamn bad he needs a scapegoat. But we don't have time to go back over all of that. What are we, a Congress facing a burgeoning forever war, astronomical new levels of debt, out of control inflation, and a dismal jobs reports? We got shit to do over here. So we'll start with this latest chapter of the story in which Rand Paul calls Fauci before the Senate Homeland Security Committee to answer questions about, you made COVID in the lab. Yes, you did. No take backs, double stand.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to our entirely non-partisan committee. First question to Dr. Fauci. In the recipe for COVID-19, how many parts bat did you mix to pangolin? Is it like a 60-40 split?
Yeah, right. Now, as you'll recall, on his way out of office, Joe Biden preemptively pardoned Fauci for whatever bullshit the Republicans were going to pretend like he did once Trump was back in power. And there was evidence that this hearing was only called in the first place as an effort to coax Fauci into perjuring himself in a way that wouldn't be affected by that pardon. Evidence that is in the form of Rand Paul just directly saying that's what he was doing. The day before Fauci's testimony, Paul tweeted out, quote, if Anthony Fauci comes before my committee tomorrow and perjures himself, his preemptive pardon from Joe Biden will not protect him, end quote.
You got to send back a reply tweet that just has like a black rectangle over. Okay, so here's what I was thinking. Fauci just says like, yes, I did make COVID in a lab to kill people. And then Rand Paul can only get him on perjury by proving that Fauci did not make COVID in a lab. Like, I get why Fauci didn't do that. It's a whole thing. But, like, that would have been fun.
Yeah. On similar lines, Fauci could have gone with, I genuinely believe we should have nothing but total confidence in Rand Paul's credibility and professionalism.
There you go. So, given the circumstances and the fact that the guy leading the committee literally wrote a book promoting anti-Fauci conspiracy theories with a picture of him on the cover of it, and had repeatedly said out loud in public that he wanted Fauci behind bars, when it came time to testify, the good doctor just read a prepared statement that pointed out Paul's obsession with his prosecution, his repeated slanderous comments, and the recent vindictive release of Fauci's unredacted personal diaries in an effort to embarrass and intimidate him. An effort that, by the way, failed spectacularly. There might as well have been a passage in one of those diary entries about how Fauci fucked Rand Paul's dad. But given all of that, he said he'd be pleading the fifth by not answering any of their questions, which is exactly what he did.
Yeah, it's great. Fauci reads a statement that ends with, I won't be answering any questions. And then Rand Paul says, we'll now be doing 3 hours of questions, during which time me and my colleagues will likely become despondent with rage. Here we go. Yeah. And then they did 3 hours.
Yes, 3 hours they did, during which Fauci was accused of masterminding the whole COVID-19 lab leak in a comic book villain effort to murder millions of people and of getting people all worked up about a harmless little flu, often by the same people. He was accused of funding the creation of the virus, leaking it on purpose, covering up the leak, and changing his messaging on masking requirements multiple times as we got more data on the nature of the virus. And when it came time for Josh Hawley to go, he just asked shit like what color his tie was. So he later could say, well, he even took the fifth when I asked what color his tie was. The whole ordeal was an embarrassment for literally every American human being except Anthony Fauci.
Okay, I actually watched some of this stupid hearing. This part was fun with Hawley. After like 20 or 30 tries in the Fifth Amendment from Fauci, the Republicans, they're still trying to like laugh it off at that point. Like, my fucker did it again. But by this point, when Hawley's about to go, it's like 50 or 60 times, and they've lost their goddamn minds. Just being like, how does he keep saying the fuck? Okay. Oh, Josh, ask him about his tie or whatever. So Hawley starts with, what day of the week is it? Fifth Amendment. What color is your tie? Fifth Amendment. And then, what color is the carpet in front of you? And so good. Fauci just couldn't fucking help himself. He glances over the table and looks right at the carpet. And then he looks back at Hawley and he pauses. And then he says Fifth Amendment. It's fun. It's so, the comedic timing was so goddamn good.
Perfect.
From this science nerd. I loved it.
85-year-old science nerd. Yeah, he nailed it.
It's absolutely perfect. But like, it's obviously also incredibly smart, because it not only highlights how this whole hearing is a complete sham, but it's also, if he had answered questions about the tie and the color of the carpet, the bunch of apes on the committee would go away telling their followers, well, he only pleaded the fifth on questions about COVID, which clearly shows he's got something to hide.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And they try to prosecute him for saying red when the carpet was clearly burgundy, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Whatever. But if Rand Paul let people outsmarting him end battles, he'd never have risen as far as he has. So after the hearing failed to produce any prosecutable perjury, he decided they should charge Fauci with criminal amounts of failing to produce any prosecutable perjury. So even though taking the Fifth is very famously protected by the Fifth Amendment, Republicans on the committee voted Thursday to hold Fauci in contempt for doing it. Despite the fact that he has cooperatively testified before Congress over 200 fucking times and at least 20 times on the subject of COVID specifically. But here's the thing. To hold somebody in contempt of Congress, you actually have to put it to a vote of the whole Senate, right? Where it would need to garner 60 votes, and there's no way in hell that they're going to get... They can't even get all the Republicans to vote for this bullshit, right? So knowing that he couldn't get that, Paul just skipped that part. Instead, he's now referring the committee vote to the Justice Department and urging Jeanine Pirro to prosecute Fauci over it. Yeah. And given how desperate she is to get back in Trump's good graces after admitting there isn't a team of fucking invisible aquatic Marxist vandals fucking up his otherwise perfect reflecting pool, there is little doubt in my mind she's going to do it.
Okay, I gotta say, I love when Antifa does weird little stuff that doesn't make any sense, like the reflecting pool. The Republicans get so confused, it's the perfect type of crime.
It's under their skin.
You gotta
skin.
Throw a lot of
yeah.
those in there.
Yeah.
Mix it up.
So that's where we are. We're dragging one of the most eminent scientists of his generation through the muck because the other option would be acknowledging all the parts of the government that the Republicans have broken in the last year and a half. And I guarantee you that the Fauci of the future is watching all this shit go down and deciding strong against the public sector.
And in There's Never Been a Better Time to Buy news. Nigel Farage's...
Dude, you're on fucking fire today, I just have to say.
Nigel Farage's farcical faux resignation by-election takes place this week with no fewer than 34 candidates in the running, most of whom will garner less than 5% of votes and will therefore lose their £500 electoral deposit. Now, that's not going to be an issue for Nige because, well, he's definitely going to get more than 5% of the votes, but then even if he didn't, I'm sure he'll find someone who can pay that deposit for him. Like, Nigel is never short of someone willing to pick up his tab, which is why he's in this mess in the first place, in fact.
Right, yeah.
Well, I'm assuming he paid the deposit in, like, FTX tokens, so it's not really a big deal if he doesn't get those back. He'll be fine.
I'm a little worried about all the constituencies learning that, what a real moneymaker, tongue-in-cheek meme elections can be, though, right?
Yeah, that is true. Speaking of which, the true hero of Clacton, Count Binface, he is yet to appear in an election where he didn't lose his deposit, so this one actually might turn out to be his strongest showing yet. As for the other 32 candidates, at least it's only a £500 deposit, and not like the £10,000 deposit Binface lost in each of his two previous London mayoral campaigns.
Okay, the polls are telling me Count Binface, he's going to be just fine with at least 20% of the vote. So just to be clear, one in five voters in, I think, a conservative area, Marsh, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%
one in five voters in that place prefers a literal garbage can, a garbage can meme guy over Nigel Farage.
Yep.
Like, Marine Le Pen is just laughing at this, being like, I'm embarrassed for you. Like, I lost to, like, abstain plus blank paper, but, like, a garbage can?
So, like, losing £10,000 by unsuccessfully running for mayor, that can really take the wind out of one's political sails. And if we needed any evidence of that, we could just look at the post-political career of failed 2024 London mayoral candidate, podcaster, occasional breakdancer and self-declared free speech champion, Brian Rose.
Oh, I was so curious how you were getting there, Marsh. I knew where you were going. I was just like, I'm following you through this verbal labyrinth like it's the beginning of a Tom essay, but you got us there. Okay.
I've got to work really hard to make it seem like Brian Rose is relevant. That's the problem.
And he's a breakdancer?
He would post, during his Bayonel campaign, he posted videos of him breakdancing. And it's exactly what you'd expect a 50-year-old divorcee to be like as a breakdancer. It was amazing.
Was that him at the Olympics the from Australia?
It might well have been. Yeah, he's great.
I want to challenge this guy to a battle. I'm gonna breakdance against this guy.
Now, you might remember Brian Rose from, I believe, the inaugural Who's Woo segment on episode 470 of this show's sister show, Scathing Atheist. But for those whose memory doesn't stretch back 4 years, he was the podcast bro in a striped suit and red tie whose show, London Real, was part business investment and part free speech platform and all scam.
Oh, okay. You're talking about the choke porn guy.
Yeah.
The choke porn guy with the crazy knot in his tie, the huge oversized knot.
Yeah, that's the guy. Those two things seem related, yeah.
Yeah, they do. Well, Brian spent the pandemic bravely championing the free speech of anti-vaxxers like David Icke, while bravely deleting any criticism he received for championing the free speech of anti-vaxxers like David Icke. And he claimed at one point to be the third favourite in the 2021 or 2024 one of the two London Mayoral races, only to finish dead last with just 0.3% of votes, a full 13,000 votes behind Binface, and more than a million votes behind Labour's Sadiq Khan.
Okay, let me get back like 600 quid from that 10K. Come on, Jesus. I got 0.3.
But he sounds like a savvy investor, though, Marsh.
Well, funny you should say that, because what has he been up to since that electoral humiliation? Well, you'd be pleased to know that I've been following his work pretty closely, through his heavily criticized business accelerator business, to his incredibly important digital freedom platform, which just needed to raise several million pounds in order to release more of the video interviews that he'd already conducted with David Icke, into his crypto investment club as well.
Okay, fun fact, David Icke is also in choke porn. I don't know if y'all remember, but it's porn for me. He declared himself the Godhead on live TV and then immediately choked on a cookie right away. Godhead. I watched that like once a week as porn.
And always finish. Yeah. After reading through his whole stupid book, I feel like he owes us choking on a fucking cookie here and there, right?
Well, my tracking of Brian Rose is why I apparently found myself on his list of potential customers to cold call just a couple of weeks ago. And because I'm an elder millennial, when I saw my phone ring with an American number and the warning suspected scam, I picked up the phone. Not immediately, obviously, I'm not a psychopath, but after 5 phone calls, 2 voicemail messages, 3 texts and an email in the space of several days, I felt I should probably see what I'm missing out on.
Okay, apparently he's made some sales after like 4 calls,
yes,
2 voicemails,
clearly,
3 texts and an email. Who are these people that this is working on?
I always think about that shit, because it's like clearly somebody out there is going, oh shit, my extended vehicle warranty. Well, that sounds important.
They've called me 8 times now.
Yeah, right. They're really trying to get in touch with me.
Well, when I picked up the phone, the caller, which wasn't Brian Rose, but they did ask me, would I be interested in learning more about Brian Rose's investment strategy in Dubai? And I told them, obviously not, because Brian Rose is a scammer that I've literally gone out of my way to warn people about. And the caller replied, thank you for sharing your perspective. And then they carried on trying to sell to me. And then I realized it's because it was an AI robocall.
I don't know, man. I worked in a call center once, and those responses just get pretty automatic at a certain point.
Well, let's see what you think as we go on. Because next they told me that they really wanted to set up a call between me and Brian so I could learn all about it. And they just needed to know when would be a good time for me and what city I was in. And so I told them, I'm in ancient Mesopotamia, and the best time for me would be around July 4000 AD. And they said, right.
Oh, it's silly. There's no, that's not a city, and there's no July back then. I get it, Marsh.
Well, then they told me that Brian himself would like to talk to me one-on-one, and I told them, I would be delighted for Brian Rose to call me and tell me all about his latest scam. And they said, great. And then they asked me, I just want to check if you've got the minimum spend of $50,000 that I would need to be ready to lay down as an initial investment. And I told them, sure. Funnily enough, I've got that exact amount currently sat on my desk in front of me in a stack of pre-decimalized banknotes that I use as a paperweight. And they said, great, we'll send you a Zoom link for a call with Brian the very next day. And the thing is, they actually did do that. They actually sent me a Zoom link, along with 4 confirmation emails, 3 confirmation texts, and 2 separate phone calls to make sure that I was ready. So they really, really wanted me on that Zoom call. And so the next day, I joined, and I must say, I had almost zero confidence that Brian would actually show up on this Zoom call. But I recorded it anyway, because of course I did. And I'm very glad that I did, because just as I was sending an angry email to Brian's email address about how I didn't like being messed around because I was giving up all hope, they're on Zoom.
It's like 9 a.m. in Mesopotamia, 4000 AD. Let's fucking go.
I sent an angry text in. I don't appreciate my time being wasted. I already sent that text and I was doing the same over email when lo and behold, on Zoom popped up none other than the most divorced dad in all of podcast brodom, Brian Rose himself.
Wow, he could find time for you despite the massive influx of potential investors he's no doubt dealing with. You're so lucky, Mars.
Right? So first of all, we do have to deal with how he looks, because in the 2 years since he failed to become London Mayor last time, he has aggressively dyed his hair. It is preternaturally black. It's the kind of black that artists go to war over.
Seriously? And he's got the big glass. He looks like Dilbert got dipped in oil head first to use as like a paintbrush or something.
He looks like an incompetent lawyer in a cartoon. And he's still rocking that Hex Triple Windsor that he loves so much.
It's so
he is.
And got straight more Windsors than Epstein Island, am I right? Hey, oh. Got him.
Amazing. Well, pretty much straight away on this Zoom call, he launches right into his patter. He's telling me that he's going to be evaluating me to make sure that I was aware of the now $60,000 minimum spend and to make sure that I'm right for this kind of opportunity. And it was just abundantly clear he had no idea who he was speaking to. And it's as if he hadn't listened to my Who's Woo segment of Scathing 470 at all.
What an asshole.
Okay, Marsh, I'm not sure if you ended up investing that stack of decimalized cash on your desk that you're using as paperweight, but as your financial advisor, I would be remiss if I didn't tell you you should act fast. Because if you remember, in the first minute-ish of that call, mm-hmm. he tells you very clearly that he often gets too much investment. And that...
he's had complaints.
And that fucks up his investment company.
His investment was too big.
Too much. So he has to lock up the slots for the investments. Yeah. And he only has a few left. So like, if you haven't acted yet,
yeah, no,
and you want to act... it's got to be now.
Mm-hmm. Like right away, he's very clearly trying to put you in a position where you're like, oh man, I sure hope this guy will let me give him my $60,000.
He really is. He really is. And it's great because he's going through this sales pattern. He asked me things like what made me interested in speaking with him. And I was honest with him. I said, well, I've been getting your emails for a while. And then I got multiple calls from your agents and they seemed very enthusiastic that I'd take part. So I had to say yes to check it out. And then he asks me what I do for a living, and I told him I'm essentially a freelance journalist who spends a lot of time investigating digital misinformation and people who profit from conspiracy theories. At which point,
so scared,
his eyebrows make a break to become part of his heavily dyed hairline.
Okay, this video is delightful. His eyebrows pop out over the glasses like a cartoon, like actually like a cartoon, and he completely panics, and then he's just like, have you been to Dubai? Do you like Dubai?
So you know that part of the story where you know they're lying and they realize that you know that they're lying, but they still feel the need to finish telling the story? It's that for like the last 2.5 minutes and it's a delight.
Yeah. You're done. You lost. You hang up here.
Right,
and he's like, no, I'll smooth it out. Yeah, and maybe I'll make a sale.
I'm fortunate that I'm well-practiced at putting on a poker face because I'm like being as like straight as I can through all of this. And it's great because you can just see him go back to his general patter.
You were very smooth.
Well, his eyes are just furiously like darting side to side to work out what the hell he could do next. And he asked, so are you from London? And I said, no, which is a shame because it meant I didn't get to vote in the mayoral election that he lost. And he says to me, did you follow that whole process? And I got to tell him, I did, incredibly closely.
So much fun to watch this. Okay, but how does he not see this coming? So you're on video with a podcast microphone right here in the frame and a sign right next to you that says on air.
Yep.
And he's like, okay, probably a podcaster and maybe a Dubai real estate mogul. wants to invest? I'm gonna pitch the fund. I might have it. Yeah.
At that point, he knew I had podcast money, so of course I'm willing to invest $60,000 in Dubai. So we'll put the link to the whole video in the show notes, listeners. You should check it out. But my other favorite bit of the conversation was telling him, he said, like, how did you get interested in me? And I said, well, I first got interested in you when you interviewed David Icke. And I said, the first time, not the subsequent 8 times. And his eyes dart around a bit more. And then just as he's winding down and looking for an exit, I asked him, and so, yeah, are you still doing the Digital Freedom Platform? Because I know you were raising a lot of money for that. And then he rage quits at that exact moment.
It's the best.
Yeah.
And that is followed by a booming, sinister laugh that I did not even recognize as you, Marsh, at first. I was like, what?
He's been holding it in for so goddamn long at that point that, yeah, look, you, and honestly, you have to at least commend Rose's sense of comic timing on the hang-up, right?
Oh,
it could not have been done better.
Yeah, it's absolutely perfect. So yeah, listeners, check out that video. I hope you enjoy it. But yeah, that's what happens when you lose an election with even fewer votes than Count Binface. So let the many, many candidates of Clacton be warned.
And finally tonight, in all the news that's fit to squint news, we have a story about former Fox News anchor, current colleague of ours in the influencer space, and permanent squinter, Tucker Carlson. He is visibly confused by his surroundings at all times, but that's never held him back in his climb through the world of news and politics. So Tucker's been watching J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio doing their ridiculous dance in their clown shoes in hopes of being anointed by the chosen one to be the GOP candidate for president in 2028. But a new challenger approaches. It's Tucker. He hasn't officially announced anything, but he held weird little summit last week at his weird little compound in Maine, where he met with a coalition of anti-Trump Republicans to think about an alternative for the next election. And I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense that they'd see Tucker as a potential successor for Trump, because you cannot watch a minute of his podcast without thinking about a great replacement.
Oh, that joke would work so much better if you didn't have to say great.
Okay, so I'm sure you're all wondering about the intellectual luminaries who would attend a summit like that. Well, the group included soon-to-be ex-Congressman Thomas Massey of Kentucky, who got primaried by a Trump-endorsed candidate. Also, Joe Kent, who was Trump's chief of counterterrorism until Kent resigned in March. And, of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who learned about the Holocaust at age 47, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. And they discussed the creation of a conservative third party that would put America first, with everyone urging Tucker to become the figurehead who makes a run for the White House. And he was like, oh my, what, me? I could, okay, I'm doing it.
Okay, so they wanted a third party that would allow them to distance the movement from the Russian asset fest of Donald Trump's presidency. And they landed on Tucker. Moscow is nicer than any U.S. city, and with such affordable supermarkets too, Carlson. That was their choice.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
I'm sure they can move mountains for their cause from their collective position of all unemployed and driven out of the conservative establishment. I mean, except for Tucker's Twitter show, of course, which totally counts as a job, Mom. It is a job. I have a job, though.
He's just in a Twitter phase. It's fine. It's fine. He'll find God. Okay, so what happens when Tucker Carlson meets with people like MTG?
Manifesto?
Manifesto, yes. That's exactly right. There is a manifesto. A few days after the summit, Tucker did a big live stream on Twitter to present his 10-point manifesto about his vision for America. And each point gets a little title. So America needs to be fair, sovereign, productive, beautiful, healthy, honest, optimistic, wise, decent, and united, which set up the perfect acrostic of FSP, how do. And I'll be honest, some of it actually sounds pretty reasonable from Tucker, but that doesn't count. Anything different than Donald Trump is going to seem reasonable in relative terms.
Sure,
and the Tucker MTG administration isn't going to do anything right.
Yeah, especially when for them to follow through on any of this, we'd be relying on the honesty of Tucker Carlson and the intellectual consistency of Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah.
Well, right, exactly. And the integrity of people who supported Donald Trump at any point in his political career. Yeah. So, yeah.
And you can see how Tucker's going to fuck it up. Some of the points are just stupid, so there's that. For example, number 4 was beautiful, and Tucker just rants about urban planners assailing us with their brutalist architecture and their graffiti. He's very mad about that.
Yeah, Tucker just prefers buildings to have more of a Byzantine influence with onion-shaped domes, you know, yeah. As long as they're stacked to the roof with rubles he can have.
Yeah, right, he enjoys that. Okay, I'm not going to take any lectures on aesthetics from a guy who had a bow tie face. Fuck you, Tucker.
Yeah. Also, number 8 was wise. It's just a slot for transphobia, obviously, the de rigueur transphobia, if you're any kind of conservative.
Well, I knew that he wasn't for wisdom, so I was wondering about that.
Yeah, right. But even when other items sounded reasonable, you can look at what he's describing and then picture the insane inflection point that would happen if he kept going. Like in number 2 from the manifesto, Tucker criticizes the cozy relationship between Trump and Netanyahu. Okay, solid point. But if he keeps going, if Tucker keeps going, he's going to mention, you know, like the Rothschild cabal and then introduce Nick Fuentes, the new Secretary of State. Like, that's what's happening next.
Right.
And then MTG in the background being like, no more space lasers. Don't get that in there, too. So, you know, Tucker, he's smart enough to just say the first part during his live stream and chop it before the crazy for now. But he's not going to chop it if he has power.
Yes.
For real.
Right, because cutting off the very end doesn't substantially change how the rest of it works. The only real difference there is aesthetics. Just ask a Jewish guy.
And, of course, everything from the manifesto about the economy is just mentioning a problem vaguely that the working class is getting fucked because he wants to vaguely court the working class, but then nothing about a solution. No taxes on rich people or making housing more affordable or fixing the healthcare system, anything like that. All that being said, and this is going to sound weird, but I am rooting hard for Tucker. Not just for my own entertainment value, although that definitely helps. But more specifically, I'm rooting hard for these idiots to split the Republican Party in half for this election. I'll take this back if Republicans completely abandon Trump and Vance or Rubio and come together around Tucker. But I don't see that working. It's not like we're in the worst timeline and that'll end up working and I'll look really stupid having said this.
Yeah, right. I'll tell you what, even if Tucker gets the party behind him, we can at least still root for the demons that attack him in the night. Or the dogs. Either one could actually take him out. So, and probably wants to.
And on that note, we're going to close it out. Thanks to No Illusions. Thanks to Michael Marshall. Thanks to all the listeners who liked us and followed us on all the various internets. Please keep doing that. Please keep listening and please keep telling your friends. And Marsh, in case anybody's new, where can everyone hear more from you?
Oh, so every week you can hear me on Skeptics with a K, where I'll be doing original skeptical investigative journalism. And you can also hear me with Cecil Cicerello on the No Rogan Experience, where I'll be looking at and helping to correct the record for everything Joe Rogan is wrong about. And it's a long fucking list.
Yeah, he might be in a new party with Tucker Carlson soon. That's exciting
might well.
For the show. All right, and if you find the naive stupidity of our giving away a free show business model to be oddly charming, you can send us gifts of money at patreon.com/skeptocrat. Just like all the generous new donors, you'll be complimented next time around. And whether or not you're feeling financially benevolent like those fine people, if you enjoyed our brand of whimsy, you'd like to hear more dick jokes for your charge, check out our brother and sister shows, Scathing Atheist, God Awful Movies, D&D-, and Citation Needed, available in all the podcast places. We just have one last thing. Let's compliment that pianist. Special thanks to Ryan Slotnick of Evil Giraffes on Mars. He's the creator of the virtuosic musical Styling Zero Today, which were used with permission. You should definitely check him out using the links we'll provide or by Googling the only band called Evil Giraffes on Mars. Until next time, catchphrase sign off. We'll do a 5 count normal, and then we're doing like a 3-2-1-0 clap on zero thing as well.
All right. Although I will say Morgan suggested that if we want to have more fun that we can go with Pop Goes the Weasel.
Okay.
Which is also fun. Well, I'm just saying, yeah. You know, if we want a little levity.
I mean, that was fun. That was
show,
fun.
Right?
It did seem fun.
Didn't everybody have fun just now?
That was fun. We're going to do a serious one too, just so.
Not that it's a bad idea, Morgan. Yeah. We're just not.
I don't think there's a double clap at Pop Goes the
I don't
the end
know.
Of Pop Goes
I have no idea
I didn't
why
have a clap in my
that.
Head for that.
But that's what he suggested. Maybe it's a Canadian thing. Maybe it's like a Grey Goose thing.
It might be.
They have a lot of weasels. They probably have weasel-based, you know, pop culture shenanigans. Mm.
Yeah. Grey Duck, that's it. It's Grey Duck, not Grey Goose.
Is the clapping
that's
to scare the weasel pop. Away, maybe? If there's like a surfeit of weasels around
yeah,
you.
Yeah, because that would really not... Because pop is a sound. So it'd be really weird to say pop goes the weasel. And then... Because the pop is like the... You know, that's the pop goes the weasel, and then you pop.
Okay. Yeah, that's true.
You're setting up
true.
Like a, you know, a pickup shinny hockey game, and there's like 9-10 weasels right on the ice, and you got to like get them out.
That's probably more of a problem in Canada than it is, here in the States.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
You've ice skated over the first weasel. It's gone pop, and you've gone, oh, shit, I don't want to kill 9 more weasels. I'm going to clap to scare them away. That is what that is, yeah.
All right, we figured it out. We know what you're up to.
The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle and Thunderstorm LLC, copyright 2026, all rights reserved.